Go ahead and call the meeting to order, Senate Finance Committee, 10 after 9:00 a.m., November 7th, 2007. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Senator Huggins, Senator Elton, Senator Thomas, Senator Dyson, and shortly Senator Olson. He was here and just stepped out of the room. And with us in the room today is also Senator Stevens. This morning, we're going to continue our discussion on cost with a presentation from Econ One, their legislative consultants from hired by LBNA. And we're going to look at the original PPT expectations of a couple of years ago, the actual results of the PPT tax legislation, and the impact of changes in the operating and capital cost environment, both within PPT and also around the industry. Just as a reminder before we get then we're going to bring the administration forward for a discussion on credits and how they affect the PPT calculation. But before we get going here, I just was a reminder to everybody could please shut off their BlackBerries. They're interfering with the recording mechanism here to make sure that we have an accurate log of the conversation and presentations here at the table. This morning, at the end of the table here, we have Mr. Barry Pullman, Senior Economist from Econ One, and Mr. Washington Lim. He's a consultant from Econ One. Did I get your name right? Yes, okay, thank you. Their report is in the packet, and they'll go ahead and walk through their presentation. We'll have some questions, and then we'll talk a little bit about credits. Mr. Pullman.
Thank you, Senator Stebbins. As you've heard, my name is Barry Pulliam. I'm a senior economist with the firm Econ One Research. I'm based out of Los Angeles. I know I've talked with a number of you before last session when we went through the PPT tax, and I've had an opportunity to talk with you in the past on gas line issues. Just to give you a brief background on who I am and what I have done on state matters. I have worked with the state on oil tax and royalty issues for a variety of years, really going back into the late 80s. I've had an opportunity to work on royalty accounting, tax reporting issues, and other issues for the state on a variety of petroleum matters. So a long history of working with the state and looking at oil and gas matters. One of the things that we were asked to do last time around when you all were looking at the PPT was to analyze the expected revenues and different other metrics as to what the system would do vis-a-vis the old gross tax and ELF system. And of course, the PPT system was a change from the old system. It was a move from a gross-based tax, one in which taxable value is measured on a per barrel basis at the wellhead, to one in which taxable value moves to what we call a net basis, and that is a wellhead value minus lease costs, both operating costs and capital costs. And I know you're all familiar with that change. That change also required, to the extent that one is wants to know how much revenues would be anticipated under that different kind of system, requires looking at the upstream costs and estimating what those upstream costs for production and capital investment are likely to be or would likely be in order to get at the net taxable value and then figure out what the potential revenues are under the system. And that is an exercise that a number of folks went through last spring, namely the Department of Revenue, in putting out their fiscal notes, went through that exercise. The producers in their presentations to you all went through that exercise, at least some of them. And we also went through that exercise, trying to figure out what those costs would likely be. And then estimate revenues over some period of time for the state. As you know, the Department of Revenue has gone back and looked at the revenues that have come in, and has now estimated that there will be going forward less revenue under the current system as a result of higher than anticipated costs. And those costs have roughly doubled, at least the expectations of those costs and their forecasts have roughly doubled on the upstream end relative to what they had before. We were asked here as a part of our work with you in this process to take a look at those estimates and see if we could figure out why they are different from the prior estimates, what's causing the difference, whether all of that increase is likely to be real, and whether the cost increases that are seen in Alaska in the DOR estimates are reflective of what is going on elsewhere. So we set about to do that, and we looked at a variety of things. I first sat down and interviewed folks at the Department of Revenue to try and get best understanding of what information they had, what process they went through, what was contained in their models. And I was familiar with some of this from our prior work last year, looking at their analysis. But in particular, I wanted to understand what information had been coming in what cost information had been coming in the form of the PPT returns and anything else that they had available. And in particular, I wanted to, in order to try and get our arms around why costs have increased, or at least projections of cost have increased relative to what was anticipated before, wanted to try and see if we could get data that would be taxpayer and field or unit specific, because to the extent that you can get that information broken down, particularly geographically, you can then look and see are these increases coming from a particular area? Are they, for instance, are they Prudhoe Bay related? Are they Kaparuk related? Are they Alpine related? Are they exploration related? You know, is this new activity that's going on? Something, of course, the PPT system was designed to encourage. And in talking with them, it was clear that that kind of information, to the extent that it's available within the filings that they have, is just not something they can give out or release. So they put out the aggregate information, but information that was more field specific or taxpayer specific, we were told at this time that just is not information that they can share with us.
Mr. Pulliam, whenever you want to start your slideshow, let us know. We'll take a quick at ease while we drop the slide. So whenever you want to gear it up, I forgot to mention that.
Okay. So in addition to those interviews, we looked at a variety of information that was available in the public domain as to costs and what's happened with costs generally throughout the world, and then what information we could get as to costs here in Alaska. I prepared a written report on November 2nd that hopefully you all have. It has a narrative section along with a number of attachments. Many of those attachments I've reproduced in this package that we're going to go through today. But if you want to get into this issue in a little more depth, I'd refer you to the November 2nd written report to go through that. Okay, I think I'm ready to go to the...
We're going to take a brief Addies. Mr. William.
Okay. This first chart that you have up there compares in the top section the cost forecasts that were used in the fiscal note to HB 3001, I'll call it the current PPT system, with those that are currently being used by the department. Those are in the bottom section, so it says the fiscal note to HB 2001 current. And I've expressed these in two different ways. One is total costs for CapEx, that's capital, and OpEx would be operating expense. And then on a taxable barrel basis, I want to talk about total cost first, and then I'll get to the taxable barrel. You can see that in the prior fiscal note for the projection of fiscal 2008, roughly capital costs and operating costs were anticipated to be about $1.1 billion each. And those costs were based on the review we've done, and at the time that they were developed and subsequently, those costs appear to be roughly in line with the kind of spending levels that you saw here in Alaska during the period roughly through 2005 to the several years leading up to and at least including part of 2005, both the operating and on the capital side. And that would be specific really to the North Slope. I'm not including the Cook Inlet with this. And then down below, you can see the current estimate is that roughly total $2.1 billion has been, the current estimate is that's going to double for fiscal 2008 to about $4.3 billion. And looking out the next several years, if you looked at 09, 10, 11, 12, the forecasts that DOR is using are right at about that, in that low $4 billion range. So they don't change much. They're anticipating higher costs over the next number of years. And as far as I know from talking with them, they don't anticipate those going down. Now, talked for a minute about how the costs were developed for the earlier work. It was largely a review of information that was available at the time, and that information covered really the 2002, 3, 4, and 5 period. It was both publicly available information and some confidential tax information that the department had, as well as some confidential consulting reports that the department had as to North Slope operations. But again, based on what we've reviewed, the kind of estimates that were there and in place were essentially consistent with the costs that were incurred in that 2002-2005 period. The estimates going forward and that increase are based on the department's review of what has been coming in under PPT, the kind of filings that they've been getting. And in part, I think, discussion with the taxpayers as to those filings. I don't know how in-depth those discussions have been. I know there's been some. But as I understand it, those current cost estimates are based in large part on the PPT information that's been filed. They are, and I think you've heard from the administration already, they are not audited. There has not been any sort of in-depth review of the supporting material. I don't know that any of that material is available to DOR at this point. But the important point, I think, to keep in mind, and I think I've heard people talk about this several times through this process, is the details behind those just have not been analyzed yet. And so whether those end up being the costs, the appropriate costs, whether they are higher than appropriate, we just don't know at this time without that with that review. I've also shown the numbers there on a taxable barrel basis. And I wanted to talk a minute about that. You can see the taxable barrel numbers in the top panel, total about 926, and in the bottom about 1885. And all I've done there is taken the total costs that are going to be used in the forecasting and divide them through by the taxable barrels. Ultimately, the state gets tax revenue on taxable barrels. And by taxable barrels, I'm talking about production less royalty barrels. So the entirety of the cost that you see, either the 2.1 or 4.3 million, reflect the cost to produce all barrels. Those costs, when you're doing your calculations as to taxable value, all of those costs get netted out against the taxable barrels, which are the non-royalty barrels. And what you see there are the figures then that would get essentially netted out in the calculation of taxable value. So earlier on, the projection was about 926. The current projections for fiscal 2008, given the current volumes, and these are all based on current volume projections, by the way, would reflect a doubling to about 1885. The other thing I would note here is that these are all averages. There's no detailed information, at least available to us, as to how these break out field by field or taxpayer by taxpayer. I know that information is available to the department, and they have in their modeling work built in field by field estimates for the costs. And it becomes an important issue because, of course, the taxes are calculated field by field, and particularly when you get into progressivity issues and whether you're taxing on the gross or net, you take into account the different costs at the different fields. So just wanted you all to keep in mind that these are averages, and there's going to be a range around those, with the higher producing, higher quality fields at the lower end, and the lower producing heavier oil at the higher end of that cost range. So, in thinking about costs and why they have gone up, and let me preface this by saying there is broad consensus amongst industry analysts, that costs for producing oil have gone up since the early 2000s, and really about the middle of the 2000s. 2005 is when you start to see some real uptick in costs, and it is highly, highly related to the dramatic increase in oil prices that we've seen. This chart here shows oil prices for ANS on the West Coast back to the year 2000 through September of 2007. If I had drawn that chart out one more month, we'd be up over $90 at the end of the chart, as opposed to just 80. But if you look at the period there, 2000 to 2004, you're looking at a period where oil prices were within the range generally of $25 to $40 a barrel. And that was sort of largely in line with what expectations were during that time as well. So if you looked at forward prices, you would not see a big difference outside of that range. People would have been expecting, at least as is reflected in the trading of oil on futures markets, prices in that kind of $25 to $40 range. From 2004 to current, you've had basically a doubling of oil prices. And that doubling of oil prices means that it is a lot more profitable business to be out producing and looking for oil. And what we have seen is an increase in activity of companies trying to produce more oil, both from looking for new reserves and trying to get more out of existing reserves that they have. And that means there is a bigger level of spending going on generally throughout the industry, and it's been in response to this pretty quick rise in prices. Before we leave that subject, I want to go to this next chart, which shows futures prices. And this is done in a little different form with bars instead of lines. But what I've shown here is all those red bars across there are the futures price for December 2011, as reflected on the New York Mercantile Exchange, for each month of 2005. So for instance, in January of 2005, people were trading oil on the futures market for delivery at the end of 2011, and the price that they were trading at was about a little less than $40 a barrel. So what this gives us an indication of what expectations were for prices long term, at least about 5 years out. And you can see over the course of 2005, that expectation changed pretty quickly. It went up, by September it was $60 a barrel, and ended the year in pretty much that same range. The latest, and I say latest, this is a week or so ago when I put this chart together, that same futures number is $80 a barrel now. That's reflected in that blue line. So on the futures market, people are trading oil out at the end of 2011, beginning 2008, at about $80 a barrel. And what this is important when you think about costs, because it is really expectations about prices that are going to drive investment decisions and production decisions. Current prices are important, but more importantly are expectations about where prices are going to go, because you're looking forward as to what your investments are going to, how your investments are going to pay off. So to the extent that you believe prices are going to be higher, you're going to be willing to do more to try and get at new reserves or existing reserves. And what's happened here as prices, as those expectations have gone up in a pretty short period of time, it's caused a It's caused a great deal of demand to be placed on services for oil production. And at least in the short term, what that means is that prices for associated with finding and producing oil go up. Let me show you the next chart here.
Mr. Pullman, can you just up there? We've been joined by Senator Terrio and Senator Green. Your presentation is attracting an audience. Please continue.
This next chart is an index of upstream capital costs that was prepared by the consulting firm IHS CIRA, and it was put out in their May 2007 press release. So I think it's their most recent press release on capital costs. And an index operates much like it's a deflator like the government uses to measure inflation and price levels. And this index works where the year 2000 is set at 100. So if you look across the chart and you see, you get there in about 2004, and you see that red line crosses 110. What that means is that between 2000 and 2004, costs for upstream capital have gone up about 10% total. And that rate that you see between 2000 and 2004 is roughly consistent with the overall inflation rate within the economy. So costs here were going up in that time period, pretty consistent with overall general economic conditions. And then in 2005, you see them really take off and move up quickly through 2005 and 2006, and you start to see a little, it may not be real clear to you in the chart, but a little flattening out there starting in 2007. And the commentary that was included in this press release suggests that we may be starting to see a flattening out of capital cost increases as we've had time to respond to the higher level of demand for oil production services. The next chart really puts those two pieces together. That's the oil prices that we showed earlier are in blue. And these are ANS West Coast prices. These are actual prices, not forward prices. But I think they still give you a picture that gives the same story. You can see that the rise in capital costs have gone up consistent with the rise in crude oil, and then with maybe that little bit of flattening out that you see in 2007, consistent with a sort of a plateauing level for oil. Although, of course, if you follow the news, you know that just within the last couple of weeks, we're now breaking $90 a barrel for oil, and if prices do continue to rise, I think it will have the same kind of effects on costs that we've seen over the last few years. It'll tend to push them up, at least in the short term, as the service firms and so forth try to respond to the increased demand for their services. Another measure that we looked at to see to what extent the rise in prices was a global effect were drilling rates. And we obtained costs on drilling, and we used onshore drilling rates here from an outfit called the Land Rig Newsletter. They track drilling rates in a variety of states, unfortunately not Alaska, but in the lower 48. And so we took that information and constructed, an index over time to see how costs increased. And you see the same kind of, similar pattern as you saw with the capital costs on the earlier page, a big ramp up there in 2005, And then in 06, and in fact here in 07, you start to see a little bit of a decrease coming off on those drilling rigs. But that increase that you see from the 02-03 period to 06, I mean, you look at the numbers, you're basically talking about a doubling of rig rates between, you know, 02-03 and what you have in 06. The next chart puts crude oil prices together with those rig rates to give you some perspective. I mean, not consistent with the sort of the message I've given you for the earlier pieces. It all is related here to a rise in crude oil prices, and really a rise in expected crude oil prices, and the profit opportunities that suggests. The next chart is another index that we constructed from data that was prepared by the Energy Information Agency, which is part of the Department of Energy. They track operating costs for oil production in the lower 48. They have a variety of different categories. We chose and used their 10-well oil lease category as a measure here. You can use the other ones. It doesn't give you a very different picture. But again, it shows this cost increase going up. And here, actually, a little bit earlier in the period, 03 and 04, but not by the same kind of dramatic levels that you have in some of the capital costs from the earlier slides. So the suggestion here is that operating costs may not be going up as quickly as capital costs are going up in response to the higher prices. Again, I've shown here a chart drawing the ANS price along with that, so you can see again the relationship between price and cost is there in place as well. Now, what does all this say about Alaska-specific costs? Everything that I've shown you so far has really been costs associated or that are measured for lower 48 production or worldwide production. There isn't a lot of public information available, at least that I've been able to find, as to Alaska-specific costs. What you do have is information that is contained in the public filings of a couple of the big producers here, ConocoPhillips and BP. And they provide data in a manner that you can break out their costs between Alaska and other parts of the region. In fact, ConocoPhillips provides it very conveniently in their reporting, and what I've shown here is what they have reported for production costs per barrel in Alaska and in the lower 48. And these costs do not include capital, so these are more akin to operating costs. But you can see here the red line is the Alaska line, and you can see that it was in that, you know, the range 03, 04, 05, it was in that mid $3 a barrel range. And never even in 05, when you started to have oil prices really jump up, didn't break a $4 per barrel number. And, you know, that's the kind of range that is consistent with the cost information that was used by the Department of Revenue and others in the fiscal notes and other comparisons that were done last session. And that would have been, at least that kind of public reporting would have been, you know, the most recent information that would have been available as of 06, when those numbers were put out, would have been that 05 data. So if you're looking at these kinds of cost information that are publicly available for Alaska, you know, on the production side, at least the ones you're getting here from ConocoPhillips, you know, looking like a number in the $3.50 to $4 range. Of course, 2006 jumps up quite a bit. It's about a 63% increase over the prior year in those cost numbers, and so now you're up over, you're into the mid $6 a barrel range in Alaska, and in fact you see a crossover between their Alaska costs and their lower 48 costs. There isn't much by way of explanation in the public reporting as to what's driving those costs, at least in the ConocoPhillips numbers. One thing we do know that occurred in 06, aside from just general cost increases, we know that we had the corrosion issues on the North Slope. We know that as a result, we have the producers, at least BP, incurred higher costs associated with replacing the transit lines, doing various spill cleanup activities. We also know that volumes came down. And lower volumes, along with higher costs overall, are going to mean a higher per barrel cost number. So all of those things are intermixed, and I think playing a piece in why you see the ConocoPhillips number going up between 05 and 06. And going up, and you'll notice it's going up here more recently quicker than what you see in the lower 48. Lower 48, you see sort of a gradual increase in those operating costs.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we assume that a substantial portion of those costs were corrosion related, would you anticipate that the costs would come down sometime in the future?
I would anticipate if I'm going to talk a little bit, I may be jumping ahead a little bit, I'm going to talk a little bit about the corrosion issues in particular, and if we could save that for a couple slides down, we can get that, address that in more detailed fashion.
Senator Elton, does that work for you, or do you have another question?
A different question that you may want to delay also, Mr. Pulliam. I mean, can I assume that production cost per barrel for ConocoPhillips might rise higher than production costs, for example, for Exxon, because Conoco is doing more exploration and doing other kinds of work, while Exxon is just kind of harvesting?
I don't know that you could assume that, because the much of that exploration work, if not all of it, would be capitalized and would be included in their capital costs, and so it wouldn't be shown in these numbers. That they've got. So these again would just reflect an operating cost number.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Please continue.
BP also reports figures separately for Alaska and the United States and then the rest of the world. And I've shown the Alaska numbers here in red, the United States in blue, and the rest of the world in green. And you can see that the Alaska costs, of course, are higher in the BP reported numbers in each of the years shown, although in 03 and 04, they're still in that mid $3 range. And then they jump up in 05 and jump up pretty dramatically in 06, you know, by about 82%. So their increase relative to 03 and 04 is much greater than Conoco's increase. And their increase in 06 relative to the prior year is also greater than what you see in Conoco's numbers. And in addition, their numbers in Alaska are increasing, their reported numbers are increasing more quickly than they are in the rest of the world. One thing I would note on this chart is the blue line here, which says United States, is going to include Alaska in it. So you can see it sort of going up along with Alaska. If you could break that Alaska piece out of the blue, it would show a little bit flatter slope, a little bit flatter increase than what you have here. The next chart, I've shown the two together, the Conoco numbers and the BP numbers. And a couple of things to note, come back and note. First off, the numbers were relatively similar for 03 and 04, in that mid $3 a barrel range. In 05, the Conoco numbers stayed below 4, the BP numbers went up to a little over 5, and then in 06, of course, you've got a much bigger jump in the BP numbers, going to over $9 a barrel reported production costs. Again, this is not going to include capital. It's not going to include property tax. It's not going to include production taxes. Let's talk a little bit about the corrosion issues and what we know about the corrosion issues. None of the companies, and I should back up just a second, that BP and Conoco are the only two that break out financial information for Alaska separately. Exxon doesn't do that, at least in their public reporting. I don't know if they do that internally within the company or not, but at least as to what gets reported publicly, Alaska's not broken out. So the kind of comparisons that I've got here, I think really it's only Conoco and BP you can do that for, based on the public information. They do not specify much in line item detail. The information is fairly summary in what's publicly reported. They have some commentary about the impacts of the corrosion repair work, in at least BP does, in their financials. But no specific line items that would tell you exactly how much is spent for corrosion repair. What we do know from what's available is that they said that the oil transit line replacement is going to be about $260 million. I would expect that most of that money has already been spent, given the effort that's been involved. So that is not, most of that $260 million is not sort of a forward-looking number. What is forward-looking is another $550 million that they say it's $550 million net for what's described as integrity management in 2007 and 2008. And this comes from their Form 20-F. And I think it says here page 18. I think it's really page 19 if you go to the Form 20-F. I think that's just a typo there. Now, they don't describe or define what they mean by integrity management, but based on what I have heard in the press and what the context of that statement, it appears right there where there is a discussion of the replacement of the oil transit lines, and I would take that to mean money that's being invested and spent on facilities to try and make sure that a similar kind of incident does not occur as to what happened in 2006. So it's bringing facilities up to date, looking to make sure that there aren't similar sorts of corrosion or maintenance issues that need to be got at pretty quickly to prevent another problem. One of the things I would say, the report in their public filing talks about this money being spent for 2007 and 2008. It's not clear whether that is money that is just for those years, and that's all that's envisioned being spent, or whether that is sort of an ongoing rate here going forward, whether that spending is contemplated for beyond the 2008 period. It's not, and it's also not clear whether that $550 million is specific to BP in its capacity of working interest owner, or whether it's BP talking in its capacity as operator. It has very different implications if it's the amount they would be spending as a working interest owner versus the amount they would be spending as an operator. If it's the amount that they're spending as an operator, that would give you sort of an overall gross amount. If it's just their working interest share, then the total gross amount, assuming the other companies would have to be chipping in their share as well, would mean that the cost would be quite a bit higher than that. You can't, at least I can't tell from what's been reported, which of those figures, which of those categories they're talking about. A couple of other comments about the corrosion integrity management costs. That the whole effort to address the corrosion problems and the ongoing integrity management program is going to put pressure on costs in Alaska for non-corrosion, non-integrity management production operations. And that's because you've got to have additional people involved with that. You're going to be drawing on a fixed set of resources, at least in the short term. And so you're going to be having to bid and pay some higher prices for those services, again, at least in the short term, to get that work done. And I think that likely is going to have a trickle-down effect and mean, or a trickle-up effect here, and mean that production costs otherwise are going to be higher as a result. How much higher? I can't tell you, but it's going to put pressure on costs, and I think will likely increase them. I do think, given the information we've seen in the public filings and the way the costs have come up in Alaska at a much higher rate than what you see elsewhere, I do think that those costs are likely included, at least some of them, in what's been filed under the PPT, and accordingly they will be reflected in the DOR cost forecast going forward. Now, whether those are appropriate costs or not for purposes of the tax treatment, I don't know, but that I do believe that they will be there and likely are reflected in those higher cost forecast numbers. This last slide just really runs through the conclusions I have, and I think I've touched on all these as we've gone through, but I want to go through them here quickly and then take any questions you have. The current forecasts that the DOR uses for costs are based on unaudited taxpayer returns to date under the PPT. They may be reduced after review and audit, but at this point they remain unaudited. The earlier forecasts were in line with what was publicly available for Alaska, at least the 2002 and 2005 period. And I would say that both on the operating level and on the capital level. There has been a general cost increase worldwide in the last few years. It's associated with expectations of higher crude oil prices, very much different expectations, I would say, than what was there just a couple of years ago. The price increases that we've seen may be mitigated going forward as supply firms increase their staffing, more rigs are built, et cetera, to respond to the increased demand. This is sort of one of those potentially boom and bust kind of scenarios that you have, but the expectation would be if you're putting a lot of strain on the resource right now and there is higher cost, higher profit opportunity for those service firms, they should respond by trying to add more capacity. And so we may see some mitigation in the costs in the long run. The increase in cost is reflected in the SEC filings in Alaska, I think. Examination of those relative to what's shown for Lower 48 suggests that the corrosion repair and integrity management costs are included in those publicly available Alaska costs. I think the corrosion repair and integrity management efforts are likely to increase costs in Alaska over and above what they otherwise would be. I think the DOR forecasts likely do include at least an element of these. And I would say along those lines, I would just add a point here. When I sat down and talked with the DOR, they were pretty adamant about what they could release as far as what they knew from the producers and taxpayers. They said that the information that they've received is taxpayer confidential. To the extent they know whether or not there are corrosion or integrity management costs embedded in their forecast going forward, they could not comment on that because that would also be taxpayer confidential. One of the differences now in the DOR's forecasts, and this has been added pretty recently, is they've put in a sensitivity or what I'll call an elasticity for costs such that as prices rise, they are also now forecasting costs to rise. And they forecast capital costs to rise at a quicker rate than operating costs. And likewise, if prices fall, they are forecasting that costs would fall. Again, more of that would go along with the capital side than the operating side. I think that kind of adjustment is appropriate in their comparisons. Whether it fully picks up all of those increasing or decreasing costs, I don't know. But at least directionally, I think that's the right kind of thing to do. I think ultimately, figuring out what the actual costs and the proper costs for Alaska is going to require just getting into the supporting information. You can't, at this point, I think, say one way or another whether the costs that are out there in forecast for Alaska are going to be lower, or whether what we have is a fair representation of the actual costs that would be allowed. You just can't know that without getting into the underlying detail. And with that, I'll take any questions you have.
I'd like the record to reflect that Senator Wagner's joined us. Subject of immense interest by Senator Wagner, I'm sure, along with the rest of us. Do we have questions for Mr. Pulliam? When we go forward, I guess, and try to sort this out, we've got the corrosion costs, and then we've got the integrity management issue of expenses. And what I'm hearing you say is it's not really clear, especially with the 550 or so million coming, if that's in aggregate or not, and if this is going to be long-term spending or not, that we should take the opportunity that we have and try to sort that out so we don't have a 550 million surprise coming at us.
I think you want to take the opportunity to at least from a forecasting standpoint, talk about a surprise, and I assume forecasting of revenues is an important something important for the state. Yes, understanding as much as you can about how that 550 relates to whether it's a net expenditure or a gross expenditure, and how long that's anticipated to go on. And whether those costs ultimately are deductible or not, I think that is important to try and get your arms around certainly as quickly as possible.
Okay. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along that line, there was underestimates of costs, underestimates of price, everything that contributed to the PPT numbers not being particularly accurate. Now it doesn't seem like we're getting anything better. We have indications from a filing, but not anything specific as to what that is or what that means. And if it's going to be, as Mr. Chairman said, something that we could expect into the future. So where does that leave us as far as gathering of information to be able to estimate with some reasonable degree of predictability what is going to happen, although I realize some are fairly nebulous numbers we may never get a handle on, but if somebody does have a feel for what they're going to expend but is maybe unwilling to share it with us, how do we react to that?
Well, you have information, at least in this process now, that's a little more real-time than what you had when the estimates were first made last spring. You have monthly filings under the PPT. Those don't always, as I understand it, give as much detail as the department would like, but that is more helpful than what they had before in making their forecasts. There are, I would say, in addition to those filings, there are ways, of course, the much more real-time information about what the costs are. You know, none of these companies, every single one of these companies, operates with a budget as to what they're going to be doing over the upcoming year, upcoming quarter, and sometimes maybe even the upcoming month. That kind of information, of course, in order to operate a field where you have multiple interest owners, that kind of information has to be shared and approved amongst all of the interest owners. And so it is not, you know, that is information certainly that is probably the most real-time and up-to-date that's out there. Now the state's not, my understanding is the state's not privy to that information. It has to wait until after the taxes are filed. And even there, at least as they're filed today, there's not the kind of line-level detail or anything like what you would have in an operating, in a budget, or you know, requests for approval of capital expenditures, AFEs, that would be forward-looking. There's nothing in the retrospective information that the state gets that provides any kind of line-level detail that would allow them to analyze and anticipate how costs might change going forward as certain things come in and out of play.
Go ahead, Justin and Thomas.
Is that typical then of a relationship that exists between an oil-producing nation or state as far as that ability to attain that information? Particularly one that does the credits and exclusions the way the state of Alaska operates.
There, I'll have to say I'm not intimate with those types of arrangements. I do, based on what I've heard from Mr. Van Muers and Mr. Johnson, I think that happens in some places, and it's more successful in some places than others. I know at least here in the United States, there is, you know, this is a unique system within the United States. The Alaskan system is much more akin to what you see with foreign countries who have a bigger source of their revenue is generated from petroleum resources. The lower 48 states really don't have anything comparable to that. They don't get the same kind of information. Now that information, as I talked about earlier, is shared regularly with the owners of the field. And I don't know, it may be that there is, at least in some of the fields where the state has net royalty interests, it may be that, or net profit share agreements under their leases, maybe the DNR gets some of that information, or could get some of that information. But whether that can be shared with the folks over at DOR, I mean, as I understand it, there's a bit of a confidentiality issue there now. Another way, of course, that one might address that is to, as you're looking forward and doing leasing, you can always require there, you have the ability to put into the lease and require disclosure of information. And to the extent you get people to agree to that in a contractual arrangement, you would be able to get that. Now, that may be more helpful for areas outside of the current operating, the current large fields at least, but something I think would be helpful to have.
Thank you.
So if I heard your testimony correctly, when we look at the fiscal note on HB 2000 or 3001, if we had the old PPT, if we look at adjusting for actual production and actual price, the vast majority of the variance lies in the operating and capital cost adjustment.
Yeah, as to what was expected then versus what was expected now. There's been some discussion, and I know in August the Department of Revenue put out their status report where they said that as to fiscal 08, the current forecast showed about $800 million less in revenues than the what would have been expected under HB 3001 and the fiscal note they put out at that time. In doing that comparison, they trued up volumes so that they're doing it on the same basis. And that $800 million, and they used the same prices as well. That $800 million difference then does flow largely from the different level of costs that were anticipated. You can back through each one of those components and see how it comes out to be approximately $800 million.
Operating capital in transition credits.
That's correct. Yeah, more weighted to capital because you've got the credits that come into play on capital.
Right.
And with the transition credits, of course, the capital, you've got the normal 20% credit on capital. So just as a hypothetical, assume your capital is $1 billion a year higher than what you thought you were going to have. Well, capital gets deducted at the tax rate, which is 22.5%. So there you've got $225 million right there. It's also a credit of 20%. So that's another $200 million. And then you've got the tie credit as well, which effectively gets you half of the current capital credit, so another $100 million on top of that. So the capital piece is the biggest, by far the biggest piece of that $800 million difference that was forecast.
Thank you. We have other questions for one. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Pulliam, I'm assuming that this is a two-edged sword for Alaska. If you are a worker on the North Slope, it may be good news in that you may begin a larger paycheck. And if you're a merchant, it's good news in the sense that that larger paycheck may be flown through your organization, distributed across multiples. And if you're selling items to go into capital construction or improvements, then it's good news for you. But my question for you, that's just my assumption. To what extent do you think that the workers' wages are reflective to some degree in the rising costs?
I think there's some of that in the rising costs. Wages are certainly going to be part of it. On the operating side, it would not appear that I would be surprised if the wages were the major portion of what's there on the operating side. I think that it's going to be more equipment related, and it's going to be more effort related. So, and let me make sure I'm clear. When I say wages, I'm like a per hour basis. Right. I don't think, except for the extent that you're probably getting a lot more overtime for people. Otherwise, the per hour number is probably not the biggest part of that increase. It's really, we've got to have a lot more people to do these things, to clean these things up, to go out and check, and make sure the facilities are up to date. So the overall level of activity is probably higher.
Go ahead, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to that extent, the more sophisticated we as a state and oversight and checks and balances that we exercise over the industry, that we can expect that cost in that area based on the efficiency and what we discover, and oh, by the way, which will equal preventive maintenance, hopefully, those sorts of things, reduce interruptions in flow or stoppage in flow or spills, that we just by the very nature of being more sophisticated, I hope, will cause some activity which may in fact cause the price to rise just based on us doing a better job as a state.
When you say that, you mean that wouldn't make the costs increase?
Right.
Yeah, I mean certainly to the extent that there are more requirements placed and those things, if those activities wouldn't be happening outside of those requirements, yes, that would cause the cost to go up.
Go ahead, Senator Otis.
Mr. Chairman, my concern in this is, and I would ask Mr. Pulliam to reflect on it, is for those, I'll call them wildcatters, that are going to come up and make these small discoveries, which we're all hopeful for in abating the production decline, that based on the cost here and other factors, if you will, that it is in fact a disincentive. I hope that's not the case. But what do you see in the dynamics of new explorers or people expanding their exploration activities in the state based on what you just described mm-hmm. to us?
The increase, the cost. Yeah. Well,
if I might, I'm sorry. The other part is how important incentives in this case, as we're going forward with the NET system, the incentives that hopefully we get right in our approach, how important those may be as we go forward in influencing that activity.
I think, Senator Huggins, through the chair, I think the incentives are important, and I think being on a NET system as a starting point puts you in the right place incentive-wise. I think that is, I know it's somewhat controversial with net versus gross, but I do think that the incentives line up a lot better when you do things on a net basis. Yes, there's more unknowns. Yes, there's going to be more auditing. Yes, there's going to be a learning curve in figuring these things out. But particularly as to the things you're talking about, how do you get it right for the explorers? Being on a net system, I think, is an important start. And then certainly the addition of the capital credits that you have there is a big incentive for them as well. And the ability to trade or sell those credits or losses they would have before production should provide a big incentive for them. But as a practical matter, when you're in this higher cost environment, remember, we're in this higher cost environment because we're in a much higher price environment. So yes, costs have gone up on average here, $9 a barrel. Prices have gone up $40 a barrel or more in that. So the margins are a lot bigger. And that's what's going on here, and a big reason the costs are going up is because the margins are higher, there's more opportunity to make money, and people are appropriately responding to that, trying to do that. But I think being on the type of system you have with the net system and the credits that are set up there and the ability to carry forward the losses or sell the losses for the explorers, those all help those folks.
Senator Thomas, you had a question?
Yes, just thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along that lines, looking at the cost, rig rates skyrocketed, but that is a national cost or attributed to across the nation, I guess. They didn't split out Alaska specifically there.
Yeah, we didn't have they didn't report data for Alaska specifically.
So that should impact possibly everybody equally, I guess, and I don't know, I guess it doesn't make any difference what that's really attributed to. And then I don't know if there's a second and a third item that you track to see what, goes into the equation here, and then how that actually impacts on your one slide where you show Alaska's costs exceeding crossing over in the latter part of 05 per barrel costs as it's related to the costs. Any kind of relationship there that you could, bring to light here for us, for me anyhow.
Senator Thomas, through the chair. The rig rates, all of the different pieces that we put here were all things that we thought would be provide some picture of what's going on globally. I mean, if we had the information specific to Alaska, we'd love to be able to put rig rates in Alaska there for you. It's just not tracked in a way that I could get at it. So the upstream capital cost index, the rig rate index, the operating cost index are all things that I think give you different pieces of the costs of producing and finding and producing oil. And those are all consistent with the fact that we see production costs going up in Alaska and that rise that you have in 05. I don't know that I would the relationship there, let's go back and look at that ConocoPhillips chart, the relationship there that you see between the lower 48 and Alaska, where the Alaska numbers are lower than the lower 48. That difference there, I don't know that I would put a lot of stock into that, because part of that is going to be, that's going to be different for each company depending on their portfolio of properties. You know, if you have if a Prudhoe Bay is a large piece of your portfolio here, but in the lower 48 you're operating, you know, secondary, tertiary recovery, small fields. I mean, you could have much higher costs there than you do here in Alaska, even though in general, you know, the environment that you're operating here in Alaska is, one would expect, a more cost-intensive environment. But you have scale here. You have large size fields, and that offers you economy of scale that you don't have in other parts of the country. So there's all that I'm saying is I wouldn't put a lot of stock in that absolute difference between the two. It's the trends that I would be more interested in, and the fact that we see the trends in Alaska rising more quickly in 06 is really what I would more draw your attention to, and that seems to be related to events that are at least in part specific to 06 here in the state.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions for Mr. Pulliam? With that, I'd like to thank you for coming to the committee. We're changing the schedule a little bit today. I was expecting Mr. Pulliam to be here all morning. The House, the other body's busy working on a similar issue, and I told Mr. Pulliam I'd cut him loose after about an hour so he could head to the other side of the building and do a similar presentation. We're going to take a little recess here, and we're going to come back at 1 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, we're going to talk about an update on production forecasts. The administration has some new information for us, and then we're going to have the administration come forward, and we're going to go into credit issues, which will tie into these other discussions we had this morning. And we will stand at recess.